Hello, this is John Mangini, Vice President of Marketing with the New Jersey Bankers Association. Welcome to the New Jersey Banker Podcast. Today, our President and CEO, Mike Afuso, sits down with Kate Gibbs, Deputy Director at Engineers Labor Employer Cooperative, ELEC 825, to discuss the current state of and challenges facing New Jersey's infrastructure, the long-term impact of the recent federal infrastructure bill, the new state gas tax, and more.
Thanks, John. And thank you to my guest, Kate Gibbs, Deputy Director at ELEC 825. This is really a great meeting. I'm so excited to have this conversation with Kate. You might have seen in some of my social media that I did a post about my one grandfather and his love of books. Well, my other grandfather was in the 825 in a labor union. And I can certainly say that the 825 is near and dear to my heart and has been able to make my family into what it is today. So I'm really happy to have you with us, Kate. But can you tell us a little bit about what ELEC 825 is?
Sure. Well, I'm so excited to be here. Thank you, Mike and John. As you said, Local 825 are operating engineers. We're part of the a building trades labor union. And I'm the deputy director of the Labor Management Fund that represents and is affiliated with Local 825. I always say that the easiest way to understand the difference between the union proper and the Labor Management Fund is that the union proper looks at the construction market within our jurisdiction, which for us is the entire state of New Jersey and five counties in New York, and tries to make their piece of that pie as big as possible. Our job at the Labor Management Fund is to grow the pie. And we do that by promoting good policy, whether it be legislation, regulations, supporting projects at the local level. We're trying to create opportunities. The more opportunities that we have, more shots on goal means more success. And so between us growing the pie and then the union fighting for their piece of that pie, that's how we approach it. But we're connected and affiliated. So ELEC represents both the members of 825. We have about 8,000 members, as well as the signatory contractors who employ them. And so rather than only coming together as labor and management to negotiate a collective bargaining agreement every couple of years, the Labor Management Fund tries to create more opportunities through those tools that we talk about, promoting economic development, promoting investments in infrastructure of all kinds, because those are the opportunities that create work for our contractors and our members. And if the economy isn't growing and we're not building things, we're not investing in the infrastructure, then we don't even get to the conversation of whether something is going to be built union or non-union. So we first need to have those opportunities in both the public and private sectors.
So you noted that you're in New Jersey and the five counties of New York. I'd like to focus specifically on New Jersey, and maybe you could tell me a little bit about the current state of New Jersey's infrastructure.
Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, New Jersey is a corridor state in the Northeast Corridor, and 20 to 25% of our GDP in this country travels up and down the Northeast Corridor every day. Infrastructure is so much more than transportation. People, I think, hear the word infrastructure and they think roads and bridges because they use them every day. But infrastructure is so much more beyond transportation. It's water, it's energy, it's schools, telecom, aviation, all of these things are part of our infrastructure. And so taking a holistic view of New Jersey's infrastructure, the country in general has about a C minus rating from the American Society of Civil Engineers. And so across the country, it's something that we really need to continue investing in. In New Jersey, we have, you know, a really densely populated area. And you've heard Governor Murphy talk about, you know, the opportunities and the benefits that our location presents itself, right? We are so dependent on our infrastructure. So if you want to build something, you need to, whether it's a warehouse, whether it's a mixed use development, you need to have water supply. You need to make sure that your stormwater is going to be able to be handled and taken care of. You need roads that are going to be passable and traversable so that you're not impacting local quality of life. And we need to make sure that we have energy that is reliable and affordable, not only for residents, but for our business community as well. So New Jersey has a really vast network of different types of infrastructure, but I would say that we're probably in the D to C, if I had to give it a report card grade. And there's a lot of challenges, but again, those challenges do present opportunities, because every dollar of public investment in infrastructure creates about a $3 economic benefit for the local area where that infrastructure is taking place. And that's through jobs, it's through increased economic activity during construction. And then you also get the benefit of those full-time jobs that come after something is built and then is supplying something else. So again, we have a lot of challenges, but it does offer a lot of opportunity.
So tell me a little bit about some of those challenges and how does the state address them?
There's never enough money to go around. That's number one, right? You know, even with the tremendous federal packages that have come through during COVID and after, there's still never enough to go around. And in New Jersey, we're a home rule state. So a lot of things are done at the local level of government, and making sure that the local level is working with the county, with the state, and with the feds all together, it can be really daunting. And not every municipality in New Jersey is equal. A city like Newark has a much bigger, more robust staff than, you know, a small town in, say, Burlington County, that maybe is mostly rural and has a very small population. So a municipality like the one I just described in a rural community might need more technical assistance to be able to take advantage of the federal funding that's available and administered through the state. So having government entities at all levels working together is always a challenge. Another thing that we're seeing is being able to get work, even if there are projects that are financed, being able to get the project moved from the funding stage into the approval stage and then construction phase so that it can then serve a community is really challenging. Across the country, but especially in New Jersey, we're seeing a big gap within these entities that provide the approvals at DEP, the Department of Environmental Protection, DOT, the Department of Transportation, for mid-level folks who have enough experience to be able to approve these projects and permit them and move them forward. And so there's staffing deficiencies across the board in a lot of governmental entities. Now, there is a way to work around that. We do have the ability to use third-party engineers and other kinds of professionals to review applications for infrastructure projects. And the state does this to some degree, but I think that there could be much more adoption of using those third-party services until we can build up the staffing that is adequate within these agencies. Because during COVID, there was a lot of retirements. And so you have kind of a large crop of young folks coming into, you know, the workforce, but they don't have that time and experience to get to the level within the departments that we need them. So again, I think that using those third party outside professionals would be a really good way to help accelerate some of these infrastructure projects. And what kills me is seeing a clean water project that's funded, that's stuck in some state level entity approval process. And not only does that mean that, you know, my members and my contractors don't get the opportunity to bid and work on that project, but the community isn't getting clean water or stormwater resilience or a new road that would help with congestion, which then alleviates emissions. So these things all compound. But yeah, I think that those would be some of the biggest kind of challenges to getting infrastructure projects delivered here in New Jersey.
You know, it's so interesting that you raise these issues. I mean, we take this stuff for granted, and you know, I love to read history, and a lot of folks that have read some of the articles that I've written, you know, I've stated my love of history. You know, it took less than 2 years to build the New Jersey Turnpike from the Delaware Memorial Bridge up to Route 46. Less than 2 years. And now if you go down off of exit 3 of the Turnpike, essentially we're trying to straighten out a tangle on 295. And they've been working on that for a decade. So it's taking a decade, and it's not even near close to done. And they've had plenty of failures down there, but it's taken a decade to essentially make a left. And it's just, to me, it's stupefying that that's the place that we find ourselves in. We also, in 1940, we built a pipeline from Texas to New Jersey to deliver petroleum products. And it was really a great thing. And I know pipelines are you know, frowned upon. But what we were able to do is bring petroleum products from Texas to New Jersey via pipeline when we wouldn't have tankers in the ocean where German submarines could torpedo them and sink them and create all sorts of environmental disasters. They built that pipeline in 1 year. We can't do anything in a year. So how do you move this forward, and how do you deal with, you know, infrastructure projects, and how do you prioritize them? You know, think about this bridge in Baltimore. They need to get it redone, but they're going to get tied up in all sorts of red tape. How do you cut through that, pick your priorities, and really move them forward?
This is some prioritizing spending is kind of government's number one role, right? They collect money and then they have to prioritize what money is going to go into capital, what's going to go into services, what's, you know, spending that they have to do because it's part of, you know, obligations like the pension. And unfortunately, infrastructure really should be done in a long-term planning way, but our election process doesn't really allow for that because we have changes. So the project that you're talking about down in South Jersey, I grew up in South Jersey, very near that project, and it's a 20-year project. From day one, we knew it was going to be a 20-year project. So that project isn't facing delays. It's just a very complicated project because in order to keep traffic moving while we're doing construction there, the people that are building that have to constantly build new roads and overpasses while they're working on other sections. So they're literally building temporary but safe, traversable, you know, alternative transportation option to get around the current construction. So, and then that has to, then when the project moves to the next phase, you have to take down that temporary, you know, piece of road or part of the overpass, realign traffic. And so it is a complicated process, but you're completely right about red tape and approvals getting things tied up for way too long. We have federal funding that New Jersey was granted after Superstorm Sandy in 2012. We were given this money in about 2013. We're now in 2024, and we still haven't approved those projects and move forward with them. There are hundreds of millions of dollars of federal money that was given to New Jersey, not only to serve those communities and protect and provide resiliency to those communities, but would also, again, be work opportunities for the contractors and members that I represent. So it's a win-win. How we cut through the red tape is, I think, essential here in New Jersey. We need reform. A lot of times, whether it's water infrastructure, transportation, energy, what ends up happening is when you have conflicting policies, it creates a paralysis. So a lot of times we'll see legislation and regulation on two different topics that the goals of those two pieces of policy are diametrically opposed. And so what's going to happen? You're going to get paralysis. So in order to, I think, expedite these projects and deliver them to the communities that need them, we have to use these third-party engineers until we have enough staff. But we also need to reduce the redundancies of permitting and approvals that we have, and figure out a way to more holistically plan at the long term. We're one of two states in the entire country that doesn't have a five-year fully funded capital plan for the way that we do transportation, so that you can literally follow along and see, okay, here's the five-year plan, here's the priority projects, here's the funding, and you can literally follow, this one's out to bid, this one's under construction, this one's in planning review. We don't do that here in New Jersey. We have a very complicated prioritization projects that's driven largely from local regional planning authorities, then goes to DOT to get on what's either called the TIP or the STIP. They're two documents, the Transportation Improvement Priority List or the State Transportation Improvement Priority List. But I will tell you that there are projects that have been on the TIP for longer than I've been born, than longer than I've been alive, that were on there before I was born, like Route 130, which is a state highway, and it still hasn't been improved. And so that is also a challenge. So making sure that we're holistically planning in a long-term way and looking at the way that different infrastructure impacts each other. So if you're building a new road and there's telecom and energy utility underneath that road, instead of opening the road three times, when we're making the transportation improvement, let's coordinate with the, you know, the local municipality and the local utilities to make sure that if we're opening the road, let's make all the improvements at once. Sometimes what happens is you'll have one utility come in, open up a local municipal road to do something, and then 6 months later, they have to come back. And every time you're doing more paving, which for my contractors and operating engineers, we like, but we'd rather see more of those monies going into more projects rather than having to do redundancy of kind of the housekeeping matters. So I know that was a long answer, but I hope
It's a great answer. It's a great answer. I could think about working for mayors and how frustrating it is to have the same road paved five times in 7 years.
Right.
So it appears to me that there are two funding sources. You have President Biden's infrastructure bill, and then you have the state gas tax. So you have those two funding sources. Tell me about how the Biden bill impacts priorities and how you view the state gas tax.
There's actually more streams of revenue than that, Mike. But I will tell you that the federal infrastructure package, yes, it provided money for infrastructure, but I think it's a misnomer to think that it was brand new money or so much more than we normally get. So the infrastructure money that we got specifically related to transportation, it's only about a 5 to 10% increase in what we normally kind of budget that we're going to get from the federal government. So it was only an incremental additional funding. It wasn't on top of regular annual funding. It was in lieu of. So again, you have to take that into consideration. New Jersey is a state, as we all know, that we pay more taxes into the federal government and send more to DC than we get back. But one of the places that we do really well is when it's formulaic driven, and infrastructure, is, especially transportation, is typically one of those formulaic issues. So we do better on bringing those dollars back home to New Jersey and benefiting our local, you know, economy and our local communities. We do better on things like infrastructure. So anytime they're doing federal infrastructure packages, it typically is a good thing for our region specifically because of that sending versus receiving state dynamic. The way that transportation is funded is really much more complicated than I think the initial person would think. So yes, the gas tax is a user fee that was originally put in place in order to have dedicated funding for transportation. This reduces property tax burden for local residents because a huge portion of that money goes to municipal and county aid. Another portion goes to New Jersey Transit. Another piece goes to DOT. One of the biggest problems right now that we have, both with the funding of transportation and with our transportation as a whole here in New Jersey, is that New Jersey Transit has been financially strained, frankly, mismanaged for a very long time. And the capital improvements that the TTF, the Transportation Trust Fund, is supposed to be supporting through that, we collect the money to the TTF, a piece goes to local aid, a piece goes to DOT, and a piece goes to transit. That money that goes to transit is supposed to be for capital improvements, to improve the system, expand the system, which then would bring more riders into the system to make it more financially viable. But because New Jersey Transit has been under this immense financial strain for years and years, and this is a bipartisan problem across multiple, you know, administrations, all the money that's supposed to be going to capital is going to plug operating expense holes. And so we're only doing basic maintenance on the transit system as a whole, because the monies that are supposed to be going to capital are really going into operating. And then for folks like the members that I represent, you know, that's really taking funds out of our pocket. You're kind of taking from Peter to pay Paul, because now we're not making those investments in the system to make it better and making that 3-to-1 economic benefit. It's going to operating. So that's a huge issue. The other thing is that from the time that Governor Kaine created the TTF in 1987 to the 2017 reauthorization, we did not adjust the revenue side once. So imagine trying to pay your bills in 2017 with the salary that you made in 1987. That's what was happening. And so we continued taking out debt, but we didn't have the revenue to match the amount. So we ended up taking more and more and more expensive debt and got ourselves into a position where if we had not reauthorized in 2017, we would have needed to take over $1 billion out of the general fund just to meet the debt service, and we wouldn't be able to pave or fix one pothole. And we would have needed to take $1 billion just to plug the debt service hole. So we made really good policy choices back then to right this ship. And it's going to take some time to get it, you know, to handle that really old bad debt service. But now that we have the appropriate amount of revenue to back up the debt we're taking, and we're refinancing and paying off old debt, it should get to a better place.
All right. So let's take for given that raising the gas tax was a good thing, because it's going to help us invest as well as help us deal with the financing questions that you just outlined. At the same time, New Jersey is planning on phasing out gas burning cars.
Correct.
So now your funding source is reducing over this period of time. How do we deal with this, and how do we make it remain solvent? And the non-gas burning cars, in theory, will still be using those same roads.
So, Mike, this is one of those contradictory policies that drive, you know, policymakers and, you know, advocates like me really crazy. Because exactly what you just pointed out, we have one part of the state saying we're phasing, and through mandates, this isn't incentives, they're saying we have to move to 100% EVs. And at the same time, they're saying the only solution is a gas tax. So how those to me are two contradictory policies. And if you notice, I talked about the really good policy decision we made in the 2017 reauthorization. The most recent reauthorization, in my opinion and in my organization's opinion, was not the best option on the table. One of our members, a third generation operating engineer, is now a member of the New Jersey Senate, and he wasn't given an opportunity to participate in the policymaking on the most recent authorization. And he worked with Minority Leader Senator Tony Bucco on an alternative plan. It is their belief that after analyzing the numbers, number one, your point about why would we support solely funding this with an insolvent diminishing revenue source, but also because of the you know, taking our medicine back in 2017 and doing what was a really tough policy position to take, but it was the right thing to do. We, you know, our organization and Senator Tiber had an alternative proposal that would have reauthorized the Transportation Trust Fund, provided actually more long-term benefits, more long-term funding for local and municipal transportation, more for DOT, would have put New Jersey Transit on a path to solvency, and would not have relied on raising the gas tax, because the mechanism and the policy that was put in place in 2017, we believe, is a good policy. Now, back then, originally, the piece of legislation included an EV contribution to the program. And it was taken out because back then there were folks in the legislature that said, we don't want to disincentivize the adoption of EVs. So they took that piece out, which meant from 2017 to today, the single mom in her minivan driving her kids to school and ballet and soccer practice and going to and from work is paying her fair share to maintain New Jersey's roads and bridges and keep them safe. But the person who can afford a Tesla is not paying one dime into supporting those roads. And because EVs are much heavier than traditional combustion vehicles, they actually do a lot more damage to our roads and bridges. And when this infrastructure was designed, we didn't even have a concept of EVs. So they were never meant to hold the amount of weight. So from a financial perspective, it doesn't make sense. From our infrastructure perspective, it doesn't make sense. And so, you know, we were happy that in all of the proposals that were kind of on the table for this most recent TTF authorization, they did include an EV piece. I think it should be higher. But again, we have to make sure that we're providing adequate revenue so we don't get into the debt crisis we had, but it has to be fair.
So bottom line is, we're going to be having this discussion again in another 4 years, because typically, you know, that's how long the Band-Aid solutions last until we're in a significantly worse situation. I definitely appreciate your point about, you know, the Tesla driver not paying the adequate amount. I also think it's interesting when you look at you know, particular parking rides that are full of high-end vehicles, and the way that we're using the funding source for New Jersey Transit doesn't seem to be seems to be a bit of a mismatch, but we'll just leave it there. But once again, I'd like to thank my guest, Kate Gibbs, and she's the deputy director at 825 ELEC. And for the New Jersey Banker podcast, I'm Mike Afuso.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.